And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where I am thrilled to be joined in a tradition that Steve Kerr started, and I will beg people to continue for as long as possible, by the head coach of the 2019 NBA champion Toronto Raptors, Mr. Nick Nurse. How are you doing?
I'm good, Zach. It's great to be on your show. I'm honored, man. You and I go back a little ways, and I don't know. I'm glad to be finally making an appearance and under good circumstances, right?
Yeah, not bad. So you just won the championship. Let's start with the serious thing first, and then we can do the fun things. Did you guys have any idea what in the world was going on yesterday when there was this shooting at the parade and the speeches just continued? And Matt Devlin then addresses the crowd, so you know something is going on. But I don't know what your angle. Did you have any idea what was happening?
I mean, obviously, when he was kind of tugging at Larry Tannenbaum, our owner's, you know, shoulder there, I figured something big was going on. There's just no way they're gonna stop, you know, Larry from speaking unless something was going on. And then obviously, you know, he said we need some time, and somebody went over and talked to, you know, some security on stage there, and they said there was a, you know, possible, you know, shooter, and that was what we knew until they came back.
Well, obviously, I think four people were injured and none life-threatening, and I haven't followed the story since, but thank God no one was killed. But obviously, a joyous event in Toronto. The crowd was just absolutely insane.
Yeah.
The
crowd was great. I was really, really hoping, you know, Zach, you know, when you go to those things, you're really, really hoping that, you know, everybody's just safe first and foremost. And it's a bummer that we, something like that happens. There's no doubt about it.
So you won a few days ago. You had the locker room celebration. Then you went to Vegas, and then you came to Toronto. Personalize this for me. I mean, this is a group that you've now worked with for many years and been the head coach of for whatever, over 100 games now. You have relationships with a lot of the coaches on your staff that goes way back. You have relationships with a lot of these players, some new, some old. What are the moments, maybe not even that you experienced, but you just watched in Las Vegas or in the locker room or the conversations? What's going to stick out to you 20 years from now from those 48 hours of celebration? What was special to you? What are you going to remember?
I tell you what, Zach, there's so much of it happening, and it's kind of all hard to take in, and I'm not really following it on TV or any of that kind of stuff. But today I did. I got up this morning and had recorded the parade from yesterday, because that's the same thing. You're in the middle of this thing and you don't really get it. But when you see the shots from above, the camera, the people, and just their such excitement for them, that's a big memory. Just looking at the sea of people, and I think it was a big momentum thing. I think the thing just kept growing and growing as the day went on, and people were seeing it on TV and were like, I can't not be a part of this. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger. I don't know. Certainly remember it was a really funky ending to the end of the game six, you know, there was a review with 0.9 seconds left and they had called a timeout, which they didn't have. And that kind of put a pause on the celebration of, you know, the buzzer sounding and, you know, running around the court or anything like that. But I don't know, lots of special moments with Nate, with Adrian, with Sergio, with Kyle, Kawhi, you know, all the guys, man, just
Was there a person that you weren't able to hug right away that you wanted to go find? I don't know who of your family was there. I think your kids were running around somewhere. But was there someone you like, I got to find that person as soon as possible?
Well, my wife was there. Roberta was there. And it took me a while to kind of get out of the initial, you know, team and coaches and everything. And, you know, obviously went straight over to Coach Kerr and congratulated him and Ron Adams, who I've known for a long time. Ron Adams and I both coached the same team in Belgium 20 years apart, him in 1977 and me in 1997.
Wow.
So we've been friends for a long time. And then, you know, then you get kind of swept up in some things. So I was trying to make my way back to my family. Yeah.
I'll give you one. I'll spoon feed you one. I was talking to Nate Bjorkren today, your assistant coach. And he said, you know, one of my major Nick memories was we faced off in the G League finals, the D League finals then, I don't know, 5 years ago, whenever it was, when you were coaching Rio Grande Valley and he was coaching Santa Cruz, ironically the Warriors affiliate, and you won. And after the game, this is Nate's telling. Maybe Nate is embellishing. I don't know. After the game, you guys are talking and you said to him, there's no reason we can't do this in the NBA. And then Nate said, when the buzzer sounded, I remembered that and we talked about that conversation. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, Nate's like a really good friend of mine. Chris, we were literally side by side with the Iowa Energy, like 20 hours a day for 4 years, trying to figure out how to win that thing. And, you know, obviously we're coaching against each other, and it's been a weird thing for me. I've coached in championship games against some of my best friends. It's been a weird, kind of track. So yeah, I was, you know, obviously you want to go over there and say something nice to your friends. You know, they're hurting after a loss, and I thought that'd be a really good thing to say, that let's go up another level. If I ever get a chance, I hope you're with me, you know?
And he remembered that conversation X years later when you actually win. That's kind of cool.
So
that's one of the things that's interesting, because it normally in a championship season, there are pivotal moments and moments of great stress and great tension. And you have this story that has been told ad nauseum now about all the different leagues you've coached and all these minor leagues when you're driving the bus and doing this and doing that. And everybody wants it to be this, like, Nick Nurse is astonished that from those places he has risen to this place. And you have not cooperated in that story because you are not astonished, and you are, I think you should be, Zach.
I don't know, man.
But I think it's kind of the story of your team is, like, you're legitimately just, like, when you say, I coached in these games and I drew up plays for in the British League and I managed egos and rosters and this and that. And it's kind of the same game. The players are just better. And obviously there are moments of stress and tension, but people want you to be minor league, aw shucks coach in awe of what's happening. And you have not been like that. Like you kind of are unruffled and unsurprised by all of this, right? I mean, you had faith in your own ability and obviously the players you got. But none of this is, like, shocking to you on a level that I think surprises people.
Yeah, I don't know. And I think, Zach, that, you know, when I kind of first came to the NBA and I talked to other coaches in the NBA and stuff, they would say a lot of things like, you know, this isn't the D-League anymore. Or, you can't do that stuff in the NBA. And I was scratching my head, and I was saying, this is exactly what we were doing. I'm like, you know, what is, you know, and I just kind of kept seeing the similarities of running a practice, you know, running a film session, scouting for opponents, and having a desire to try to get your guys to play as good as they could together and as hard as they could. That's really covers a lot in the game of basketball. Listen, it was big. It was big when you look out and see whatever 500 media people or 700 media people watching practice, you know. It wasn't like that in any of the leagues I coached in. But, again, I thought it was so – I almost felt so secluded from all that stuff because, you know, it's a pretty tight schedule. And when you're done with that, you're kind of back in your room watching film, you know. And I don't know. I just tried to believe in myself, Zach, and have confidence and – I think that we had a great team, and they played their guts out, and that goes a long way in any league.
A question that the people demand to know the answer to: what is as the subject of both now memes? What is Nick Nurse's favorite Nick Nurse meme? Is it Nick Nurse walking off the plane with the guitar over his shoulder like a rock star? Or is it the Nick Nurse open mouth astonished at a bad call against Orlando clip that went viral? Which is the better Nick in from you, which is better?
So this should probably be, which one do I like better?
Maybe you hate both. I don't know.
I don't particularly like either one of them.
Really?
But I'll take the open mouth one. I think the open mouth one makes people laugh more. So there you go.
Why don't you like the guitar one? You look so cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't like trying to go for that look or anything. I was just trying to get my stress relieving guitar to the hotel, man. That's it.
Speaking of musical instruments, I hope that I've heard this accurately, and my prompt is going to prompt you to tell the story that I'm thinking of. But I believe, having won the NBA championship, again, speaking of musical instruments, you have now vowed to return to San Francisco and purchase a high-end piano. Please tell the background of that story.
Well, I'm on the hook for it. I think I'm on the hook for it. If we're going to go with my word is stronger than oak, here we go. I'm on the hook. We're staying at about four doors down from Steinway & Sons, you know, one of the top piano makers in the world, you know, in many concert halls around the world. I played the piano for a while, a heck of a lot longer than the guitar. The guitar is like a year-old hobby. And I was just, Nate and I were walking by, and we stopped and looked in the window, and I said, if we happen to win this thing in San Francisco or Oakland or here, if we win this in this year, I'm going to buy that piano right there. And that was all that was said, and obviously we won game six there, so I'm on the hook for that.
What color is the piano? You had a specific piano?
It's a nice one. It's a grand piano. I mean, I'm going to have to probably get a bigger place to live to fit a piano of that nature in my home. So,
but from what I heard,
baby steps on this one, Zach.
From what I heard, though, this is not a store that like me, random dude, can just go in. Like, you got to get permission to go into the store, and you would go in and play as sort of like a stress relief, or maybe not a stress relief because you like playing. But like, from what I had heard, like, I can't walk into the store, right? It's like that high end of a store.
No, you can walk in.
Oh, okay.
It's like another, you got a buzz that they're going to let you in.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
Somebody come to the door. It's not like people are winging in and out of there freely, you know, foot traffic. But, yeah, went in and played one of the really, really, really big ones just for the heck of it. That was pretty cool.
Let's go through some of the moments that I think people are going to remember from this playoff run, and you can tell me what you remember of them or what you can add. And we'll go loosely in reverse order. So Kyle Lowry comes out in game six with the championship at your fingertips and scores 11 points in what seemed like a minute. And I've always been a big Kyle fan. Everyone knows that. I truly believe that he impacts the game on a much greater level than some of his raw numbers would indicate. Rarely do you see Kyle Lowry go out and grab the game by the throat in the first quarter as a scorer. Was there a conversation you had with him that convinced you maybe that was coming? Did you see that coming? Could you just tell from looking at him, or did it surprise you? Because that, as great as Kyle is, that's just not a thing that happens very often. And for it to happen in a moment like that, I think is really unique and special.
I wouldn't say, you know, hey, there's any conversation, you know, that you're going to come out and say, you know, you're going to talk about being aggressive a little bit. And we had, I don't know when it was, game four or something, we talked about. I get the games mixed up a little, Zach, but
it's hard. The playoffs are really long.
One in Oakland. I think you probably heard this story too. Somebody had written "Let It Rip" on our dry erase board, and I didn't know at the time who wrote it. And I was getting ready to do my last little bit of film and talk, and I said, "Kyle, did you write that on there?" And he goes, "No," but he said, "That's the way I feel." And so I thought that was a good sign that he was ready to let it rip a little bit. And I wrote it on there again going into Game Six. It's actually Adrian Griffin who wrote it on there. I didn't think it was his handwriting, but it was Adrian Griffin, assistant coach, who wrote it on there the first time. And I wrote it on there again in game six before we took the floor. And I don't know, I thought looking at him as I was doing the morning prep and stuff that he just looked really, really, really ready, determined, and thinking he was ready to win, you know, in game six. And that's all I can say, really.
No, I saw him between games five and six at practice. I guess it must have been at Oracle, I guess. And we just exchanged, 45 seconds of pleasantries. And I don't know what we were even talking about, but I said, hey man, good luck. It's a long way to go. This is just sort of what you say to people who are ahead in series. Hey man, long way to go. You never know with these guys. It's the Warriors and blah, blah. And he just kind of looked at me like, it's not that long to go really. And I thought, wow, they're ready. They're ready to win this. They're confident and the group was confident the whole time. Okay. Other moment, next moment. Game five in Toronto, again, that now you have a chance to clinch at home. The city is ready for you to clinch at home. Kevin Durant plays, and the theatrics of this game, I don't think I will ever attend a more theatrical NBA game than that in the very sort of just basic sense of what theatrical means. He's dribbling on the right wing. He collapses. The entire arena just gasps. The game is going on. I don't even know what's happened in the game. I'm just fixated on Kevin. I think you guys score on a breakaway. Then the game stops because he's injured. And I think you told the media afterwards that one of your players had told you something or other about how this is not just a calf thing. This looks bad. So what do you remember from that huddle? And how do you sort of get your team to just be like, okay, this thing happened. Let's regroup and go out and play a normal game. But I don't know who talked. Maybe you talked, a player talked. Like, what do you remember? That is a weird huddle in a weird moment.
Yeah, I think, Zach, it was kind of two moments, really. I think there was like a moment of they called us all over, and that was kind of going on about this isn't good, and there was some, shocked looks or. Yeah, shock look on a player's face, just a guy on the floor goes down like that, something without any, the way it happened, it was something serious because he was on his own and he just went down. And I think, much like in an NFL game, when somebody goes down and everybody's just like shook up, our guys were shook up. Then I think there was a timeout. So I think there was a moment where we were over and then there was a timeout. So then we were kind of, shortly after gathered again and there was a couple guys saying, let's go, snap out of it and we got to play, I just kept hearing some guys saying, let's go, we got to focus and play and they were kind of just managing on their own, to be honest. That
then a game happens and it's an absolutely classic game where you're up six with about 3 minutes to go, you call a timeout, which we will talk about, which was the subject of much discussion. And then they come out and go, Clay three, Steph three, Clay three. Oh my God. They're going to win. And you go from, people wanted to make this, I shouldn't say that. I don't know that many people. It felt like you guys were so close, but really you looked at the clock and said, yeah, they weren't that close. There's a lot of time. But still, you are at home. You are up six. If you play those 3 minutes pretty well, you're going to win the championship. There must be some part of you that even with 3 minutes to go, even though you want to push it down into the recesses of your soul, feels, oh my God, it's here. So A, did you feel that? Did you allow yourself to feel that a little bit? And B, after you lose and go in the locker room, what do you say to the team, or do you sense it's just a normal loss? They're fine. We're ready.
A little bit of all that stuff you said, Zach. I think there was a little bit of a moment where you're thinking, "Man, we're really close here. We gotta finish the game." I think I followed that thought up immediately with, you better coach your butt off in these last 3 minutes if you want to finish the game. kind of the same feeling I would have given the team, because that's nothing. That's it's two trips in this league in 3 minutes. It's going to happen a lot. It happens a lot. And then afterwards in the locker room, yeah, there was some thought for me to quickly flush the game down. Make sure it didn't have a too much of an emotional hangover or emotional impact, so that we would never recover. So So my you know, I grabbed the staff first in a boardroom real quick and told them, hey, we got to get over this one quick. Let's nobody hang in our heads. Let's walk out of this thing with some bounce and go in the locker room. Let's be positive and let's get ready to keep fighting. We knew it was going to be a long series, and it continues. We're up 3-2. Let's stay positive. And that was kind of the message I gave the team.
And you thought, did you feel that the players were, when you walk into the room and you see the players, do you see a group that's also flushed it? Do you see a group that's ready, or do you see a group where maybe a couple guys are looking a little antsy or a little worried, or what do you see?
I see a group that's okay, Zach. I don't think they'd flushed it, but I didn't see worry either. And then when I saw them the next morning, I knew they'd already – we got on the plane the next day, and I knew they'd already flushed it. And I was like, okay, we're good.
How'd you know that, just the way they're acting?
Yeah, just body language, talk. You could see the courage or fight ready to keep going in everything they were saying and moving, and it wasn't any phony about it. You know what I mean?
Kawhi's shot in Game 7. I rewatched it just now to remind myself. Okay, what did it look like? Where is Nick? What is Nick's reaction? I think we've all talked about that shot enough and the four bounces, and we can all visualize it in our heads. How did you feel about the prospect of overtime in that game? Because I can tell you, as I was not at that game, I was home. As someone watching on TV, it felt to me, and again, I'm not there, so my feelings are probably worth nothing. It felt to me like Philadelphia might win this in overtime. They're bigger, they're a little fresher, they kind of are confident. How would you have felt going into overtime? Because that was a drag-out game.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. I guess I didn't really contemplate how I felt about going into overtime. We actually kind of had a little more control of the game there at the end than it appeared. I mean, if we were kind of leading, and always by more than one possession, or at least three with the ball, and even the last one, they had to foul Pascal, and he just happened to miss them both, you know, or it wouldn't even have been that kind of situation. If he'd make those, it wouldn't have been, the game would have been over. But he didn't, and Jimmy raced it right down and scored, and here we were set up for the last shot, so I didn't have a lot of time to contemplate about, what's going to happen in overtime. I try not to get to overtime thoughts until overtime starts, Zach.
Are you on to Milwaukee almost as soon as that shot drops? Or I mean, I remember someone said, I think Kawhi said, I'm just going to try and enjoy this before we start thinking about the Bucks. What do you remember about the aftermath of that game from your perspective?
No, I was thinking we better enjoy this too for a day. And I even told the team, that was a hell of a series. And that was a hell of a team we just beat. And we got a few days, you know, we didn't play them for about 4 days or something. And I said, you can spend tonight and part of tomorrow, and then we'll get back here and get ready to get to work on Tuesday or whatever it was.
That's something that you did throughout the season. I remember talking to you at the beginning of the season when we were all up there. ESPN had a big Raptors thing in December, and you were telling me, like, I'm trying to be – it's a long season. Like, and the story has since come out that you wrote, you know, AMJ on the whiteboard, April, May, June. But, I mean, that was a conscious effort on your part to say, like, I'm not going to overdo it with film. I'm not going to overdo it with Pratt. Like, I got to no matter how much my instinct is to coach and coach and coach and coach, like, sometimes you just got to let it breathe a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think, we did try to cut back on a lot of stuff, physically, as mentally as much as physically, Zach, just to kind of, prolong our growth or continue our growth, and then again have a lot of juices, both mentally and physically, ready to go in playoffs. It's a long run.
Have you watched the shot like 20 times, like the rest of us, or have you even watched it once more than one time? Not on video?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've only seen it probably really good, like once or twice. I mean, I see it going on a lot around the city a lot, but I don't, like, not like I'm watching it exactly. I haven't watched much. Like I said, I haven't watched much of the stuff. I really tried hard to use all my energies just to focus on the next task. And I will here over the next few days. I'll go back and watch some of the stuff just to let it sink in a little bit, probably.
So I have said many times on this podcast that game and that series? Because I picked you guys to win in six, I think, but particularly after game one, I thought you would have an easier time against Philly. Gained a lot of respect for Philly throughout that series. Game seven and the way it unfolded was the first time my faith in you guys as a finals team was shaken, because it just felt like there was one guy on the floor who wanted to shoot. It just felt like Kawhi had to take all the shots, not because he was demanding it and playing so super duper well, yeah, but because everyone else got a little timid and a little panicky. And I thought to myself, well, if that's how they're reacting in game seven of the second round, like I'm a little worried about what happens in a tight spot going forward. Did that worry you at all? Did you just chalk it up to it's just one game, or am I reading the game totally wrong and you didn't see any of that timidity in some of the other guys?
No, you're reading it right. And Zach, there was a lot of moments, even like in the Orlando series, where our defense was unbelievable against Orlando, and we didn't shoot the ball with the darn. You know, we were winning some of those games shooting 38%, and I was like, geez, when our offense ever gets to playing like it's capable of playing, we're going to actually be pretty good here. You know, we're going to be able to beat anybody if we start making some shots. And I kept saying that all the first couple rounds, we're creating all these shots, and we just weren't making them, and it just took us a while to ease into the rhythm of playoff basketball. I think the shots were there, but we weren't quite in rhythm and ready to take them. And you're exactly right. There were some guys that we were getting drive, kick, swing wide open, and it'd be one more swing pass back to the guy who just threw it to him, and he wouldn't be open anymore. And it was like, wait a minute, we got to get, you know, we got to find this rhythm here somehow. And I think we did, you know, I think we did eventually. And that what's, you know, it took us another really big step forward. But I will say this too, Philly was darn good, Zach. Man, I don't think anybody, I mean, I knew they were good and I knew they were super talented, and we gave them every bit of respect that they deserved. But I think around, people were not giving them enough credit for how good they were.
Yeah, they're big and they're tough and they're nasty to play against, and it'll be interesting to see what they do in the offseason. It's reminded me of something I wanted to ask you, though. You know, I remember, you know, I know when I felt during the season that, okay, the Raptors are finding a groove. The Raptors look like a team. I remember writing in March or April, they look like a team that's peaking at the right time. But, you know, before that, it's particularly the first 30 or 40 games of the season, I just remember watching you guys, and a lot of people have written that there was the Kawhi offense and the Raptors offense and how can we mesh them, and that was a big issue. You could see that. But on a more basic level, for the first 30 or 40 games, I just watched a Kyle Lowry that was so unwilling to shoot that I almost didn't recognize that player. And now you can tell me, well, he wants to facilitate for his teammates and he did a great job sort of getting Serge going as a scorer, and he wanted to defer to Kawhi, and he's smart about feeling out, you know, this is a totally new environment with Kawhi Leonard here. How am I going to operate? How does everyone need their touches? You can tell me all of that. And there were still some games, a lot of games, where I would watch him and be like, man, he is, something isn't right here. I even joked in a column once that I wondered if he was, and it was almost not even a joke, I almost wondered, like, is this like a temper tantrum about the DeRozan trade? Like, is he upset about it and this is how he's playing? Is that something you were in on, like, or am I exaggerating it, or did his early season play raise eyebrows for you too?
No, I think you're on to something. I would give you my twist on it is this. I think you and I, maybe after a few games, were like, you know, we'd win, and I'd say we're not playing very well, and we're winning a lot of games. I don't remember what we went out. We went out with a really good record to start the year.
Yeah.
Like really good. Right. So, but I remember talking to you and even to Tim Bontemps, and I was like, we're not playing that well. There's a rhythm we're not finding quite yet. You know, I was super happy that Serge seemed to settle into a five position. I was super happy that Siakam was emerging. Those were positive. I was happy with the way Kyle was playing. I don't think he was, I think he used the word temper tantrum. I thought he was pretty good natured about playing that way. He wasn't surly and scowling and hating it. He was just playing differently. And was going, you know, 10 assists a night, 12 assists, you know, over 10 a night. And I don't know, I kind of liked it as well, except for we just needed him to be a tad more aggressive. Right. And, that kind of fell into place later on.
Kawhi is such a mystery to people. that literally an article about things he liked to say in college became a sensation, because just like, what does Kawhi say? Because it's like a story, and they were funny things. So I get why it became a sensation, and now it's a t-shirt and a billboard and everything. Do you feel, and you've told the story about your first meeting with him many times, about how you thought, oh man, this is like, this might be a short meeting and I got to come out with things to say. And it turned into like a big basketball Q&A, and there's diagrams on the whiteboard. Do you feel a year later or whatever, 11 months later after the trade, almost exactly 11 months actually, do you feel that you know Kawhi Leonard as a human being much, like, much better than you did a year ago? Like if you and I were strangers a year ago, you would expect after a year of close interaction, you would know me really, really well. Do you know Kawhi really, really well?
I know him a lot better, and I really like the level of our relationship, the level of our communication. You know, if we were going into that meeting tomorrow, it would certainly have a different feel for me. Obviously, I know him a lot better. And I think, again, Jack, I think this whole thing about him, you know, not saying things, being so quiet, is almost played out. I mean, he was unbelievable yesterday at the parade speech. He was the absolute, stole the show.
Right? Yeah.
And he does that constantly. He's like the funniest guy in the film room because he waits and delivers the knockout punchline, man, you know? He was like, he's coachable. He talks to me a lot during the games, about the games, in the huddles. In the film room, he talks a lot. I think it's probably we've misread him a bit in that way.
Any punchlines you remember? Because I think I heard one at some point during the season.
He killed me, yeah.
Huh?
Go ahead. Which one did you hear?
Well, I can't remember how I heard this, but I think there was, you were talking about your experience in the D League at one point, and he just kind of piped up from the back of the room like, Coach, we're really talking about the D League here? Let's go. Like, but in a funny way, not in a dismissive way, but just that's one I heard, but maybe I'm hearing like, you know, a game of telephone or something.
Yeah. Again, I got to remember what series it was. I think it was Milwaukee, and I think we'd gone up 3-2. And we're coming home. That's exactly what it was, coming home. And I just was relating, you know, I go in there and I don't talk about those games much because, you know, it's a different level. But I just told them that one time in the D-League we won a game one on the road. It was actually against Rio Grande Valley. And nobody really expected us to. And we went down there and won. We'd lost all our players to call-ups, and they were great. And then all of a sudden we get back home and the city of Des Moines was going crazy because we were up 1-0 and we had two home games and we were going to win the D-League title. And they were planning parades and asking us for ring sizes, all kinds of stuff. We went out and got beat by about 25. So I was just trying to tell that story to say to guys, hey, listen, everybody's going to try to take you some places that you're not to yet. And you can't let that happen. And so I started telling the story about parades and he goes, and he quite jumped in right in the middle. He said, in the D-League, he said, I'm done listening to this story. I had to take the heckling and move on. But I showed him a couple pictures the next day, you know, and it was like 14,000 people at the game. I was trying to show him. It was Iowa, man. It was a big deal.
Yeah, that D-League, is a big deal.
The D-League championship in Des Moines is a big deal anyway.
Now,
moving on, Zach.
I have one last Kawhi thing that I have to ask, or else it would be derelict of duty. Do you have any feel for what he's going to do, or do you just throw your hands up and say, I'll find out when everybody else does?
Yeah, I have no idea and haven't even talked to him about it. I'm going to see him, I believe, tomorrow morning. I think he's leaving tomorrow afternoon or night, going somewhere, and I'm going to see him tomorrow. So I'll ask him. I'll let you know what he says.
Yeah, I was going to say, to ask him and just call me up and tell me what the answer is. Let's go back to Milwaukee as we reach toward the end of our time here. I do feel like game three of that series is going to be a little bit lost to history, given that you, in the memory of that series, you kind of rolled them four straight. But that's not quite what happened. And that game three was an absolutely wild double overtime game where you led the whole game and they just kept on, like, we're within six, we're within eight, we're not getting blown out. And then they came back and tied it. In the fourth quarter, I believe Pascal missed a couple free throws. They came back and erased a 4-point deficit in the first overtime. Kyle fouled out in regulation. I think Norm Powell fouled out in overtime at some point. That's an absolutely wild game. I don't know if there's a moment you remember from between overtimes or in overtimes where the craziness of it hit you, or the danger of, okay, this game that we controlled from 6, 8, 10, it just felt like a game we were in control of, is now slipping a little bit out of our control, or was it just, you know, we got this if we just sustain a little bit?
Yeah, I think I didn't really feel like it was getting away from us. Each of the regulation, overtime, I mean, we were just wouldn't finish it. I mean, the ball just wouldn't bounce our way, or we wouldn't make the exact play. But we were, again, seemingly with the ball in the lead, or with tied in with the ball, you know, whenever we needed it. And again, I thought we played great the whole game. Like you mentioned, we were kind of 8-10 the whole game. And it reminded me a little bit of game one. I thought we, like, completely outplayed them in game one and got out of there with a loss, you know, somehow. And I was just trying to prevent that from happening again, because I loved the way we played them in game one and game three. And game two was another story. They clobbered us in game two.
But even in game two, you came out. I believe you won like the last three quarters of that game. And
yeah.
Some teams take solace in that, and some teams don't. It sounds like you didn't. It sounds like we just got rolled.
Well, it was okay. I mean, we did play a pretty decent second half, Zach. But I always say that's one of the easiest things in the NBA to do when you're down 20 and cut it to 6 or 8. That happens quite a bit. You know, it's not. I don't take much solace in that, but. But, again, I think in games one and three, we played well enough to win, and we only had one win out of the two games to show for it. But I still thought we controlled three pretty good. You're right, though. One or two bounces the other way, and that series could have been over.
When did you know that Kawhi had double-dribbled on his steal and coast-to-coast layup? I think that put you guys up 3 or 4 in the second overtime of that game, because I didn't know. I'm not on Twitter during games because I'm too dumb to focus on two things at once. I just need to focus on the game. So I didn't know until I checked my phone and got a text message from a few text messages saying, I can't believe they missed that double dribble. I said, what the heck, double dribble? When did you know it was a double dribble? Or are you going down with the ship that it wasn't a double dribble?
I just now, you told me it was a double dribble.
No way.
That's the first I know of it, Zach.
Are you serious?
I can't even. I don't even remember the play you're talking about. But
3 minutes and 20 seconds left in double overtime. He steals the. They posted somebody, and he was guarding the guy one pass away. And he either reached in and stole the ball, or and then he recovered it, and he dribbled, and it was ended in a lefty dunk. And Brogdon, who was trailing him, was the only guy on the floor who realized that it was a double dribble. He picked it up just for a split second. And so you're this is news to you.
I know. I remember the lefty dunk. That was awesome. I'll have to go back and check that out now that you brought it. He probably got fouled along the way anyway. He usually gets hit by somebody when he travels or double dribbles. So.
I hope I watched it again. I need to go back and read the last 2 minute report. Maybe it somehow wasn't a double dribble, but it seemed like a damn clear double dribble. a damn clear double dribble to me.
I don't know.
That's great you didn't know. Marc Gasol, one of my favorite players in the last 10 or 15 years of the NBA, is now a champion. That makes me happy. The Serge Ibaka Marc Gasol thing on a different team and a different place in a different world becomes an issue. Who starts? We flip-flop starters. Who's going to win the role? Is anybody going to win the role? Why did that not become a thing for your team?
Well, I tried to slow play it a little bit. Zach, I didn't, I let Mark start a little bit when he came, and then I let Serge have about 3 or 4. I don't know. I just think that they were both at stages of their career where they were mature enough to realize the situation, and they both accepted it and were happy. I mean, obviously, Mark ended up being the starter, but there was times when Serge would play, 15 straight minutes to close a game.
Yeah.
So if it just kind of was like that. And I that was a very mature, professional, selfless thing that they both did.
I forgot to ask you one Milwaukee question. Game three, obviously the adjustment everybody will remember is Kawhi guards Giannis. Clearly that is something you consider before the series. It's a card you have in your back pocket. Did you expect to play it in at some point? Did you hope not to play it? And who is there a conversation after game two or between games two and three where you have to get Kawhi in a room and say, okay, the thing we talked about, are you ready to do it?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't that. It turned into more of a thing probably than it did beforehand. I mean, obviously we had a lot of matchup scenarios, a lot. You know, that team's got a lot of moving pieces, and so do we. So there was a lot of them. That was one. And no, it was just in the prep leading up to game three. You know, it was a quick walk up to him and said, hey, we're going to start you on Giannis tomorrow, see what it looks like. And he was like, okay.
Well, it looked good.
Pretty good. So we stayed with it. Yeah, so we stayed. And that's what happens on some of that stuff, Zach. You know, you got all these ideas, and there is a lot. You know, there's a lot of who's going to guard this guy, and there's a rippling effect to two or three other things, and there's lots of options. And usually we go in there with let's try them and test them and feel them out and see how it goes. And sometimes it's great. Sometimes it isn't, and you're off it. Sometimes it's good one night and not so good the next, and that's kind of what we're doing over there during the game is trying to figure all that stuff out.
Last question, and I'll let you go because I want to stick to our time limit here. You know, I've focused on a lot of the playoff moments and the high leverage moments and some of the main characters in the story. I don't know. You live this. Is there something off the beaten path that was special to you from this season or this playoff run? Is there a person that we haven't mentioned that was special to you? Is there a game that was, you know, forgotten because it was game 41 of the regular season? Is there something we haven't hit that's a moment or a person or a game that you will remember as like, yeah, we won the championship this season. This thing, for whatever reason, sticks out to me.
Well, there's a lot of them, Zach, and I could just probably give you a couple of them, and you've probably heard about one, which is worth repeating anyway, and then the other one maybe wasn't such a big deal. So let's start with the lesser one first. You know, we went to San Antonio in the Kawhi return game and got our doors blown off, and there was a little bit of talk about, you know, the team, this is a big game, and they couldn't handle the pressure of the big game, and blah, blah, blah. And we turned around, I think it was the next night, and went to Milwaukee on a doubleheader and won in Milwaukee. And that showed me a lot, that this team has a lot of fight, courage, and belief, right? Pretty low moment and pretty embarrassing moment down there in San Antonio for all of us. And I think that was a bit of a coming together of our team right there. And then obviously the other one was really, really cool and special for me. You know, my mother passed away right in the middle of the season or early in the season. And I flew home to see her before she passed away. And I flew straight back to L.A. and walked in the locker room and told Kyle that I was here coaching because my mom would kick my butt if I wasn't. And he looked at me and said, we're going to win a title for your mom. And, you know, now that we've done it, that's a little bit taken aback by that coming true.
Yeah, that's a hell of a prognostication and a cool moment that you get to take with you forever. And Kyle does too. And I'm sure your mom is watching somewhere and knows that you're a champion. And I got to tell you, man, it's still wild to me. I've been going to Toronto all these years because my in-laws are there and I've seen the rises, the falls and, you know, the Bon Jovi banner that comes down because it's a little embarrassing and this and that. And the purple dinosaur uniforms still float around. And I said to my wife last night, I was like, we're sitting there on the balcony having a glass of wine real late at night. I said, I still kind of can't believe the Toronto Raptors are the NBA champions. But the Toronto Raptors are the NBA champions. Congrats on a great season. I will see you soon. I guess we'll see how the offseason goes. But again, congrats, and thanks for making a little time for us.
Thanks a lot, Zach. Really, really an honor to be on your show, and appreciate all the years we've known each other. Thank you.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.